cause, or belief to the outside world. Their willingness to pay a premium or suffer inconvenience to use your product or service says more about them than it does about you and your products. Their ability to easily see why they need to incorporate your products into their lives makes this group the most loyal customers of all. They are the most loyal shareholders of all, and they are the most loyal employees of all. No matter where they sit in the spectrum, these are the people who not only love you, but talk about you. Get enough of the people on the left side of the curve on your side, and they encourage the rest to follow. I love asking businesses what their conversion on their new business efforts may be. Many answer proudly, 10%. If you ignore the principles of the Golden Circle, the law of averages says you can win about 10% of the business. Throw enough spaghetti against the wall and some of it sticks. To grow the business, all you need to do is more prospecting, which is why growing your business by aiming at the middle of the curve is so expensive. Though the business may grow, the average will stay about the same, and 10% is not enough for the system to tip. Likewise, 10% of your existing customers or clients will naturally show loyalty to you. But why are they so loyal? Like an inability to explain why we love our spouses, the best we can muster up to explain what makes them such great clients is they just get it. And though this explanation may feel right, it is completely unactionable. How do you get more people to get it? This is what Moore refers to as the chasm, the transition between the early adopters and the early majority, and it's hard to cross, but not if you know why. If you have the discipline to focus on the early adopters, the majority will come along eventually. But it must start with why. Simply focusing on so-called influencers is not enough. The challenge is, which influencers? There are those who seem to fit the influencer profile more than others, but in reality, we are all influencers at different times for different reasons. You just don't want any influencer. You want someone who believes what you believe. Only then will they talk about you without any prompts or incentives. If they truly believe in what you believe, and if they are truly on the left side of the curve, they won't need to be incentivized. They'll do it because they want to. The entire act of incentivizing an influencer is manipulative. It renders the influencer completely inauthentic to his or her group. It won't take long for the group to find out that a recommendation wasn't made with the group's best interest in mind, but rather because of one person's self-interest. Trust erodes, and the value of the influencer is rendered useless. Refusing to consider the law of diffusion will cost you. In 1997, TiVo was racing to market with a remarkable new device. Few would debate that from the time the product was introduced to this current day, TiVo has the single highest quality product in its category. The company's PR has been extraordinary. They have achieved an unaided awareness that most brands can only dream of. They have become more than generic terms like Kleenex, Band-Aids, and Q-tips. In fact, they've been able to achieve more than generic status. They've become a verb in the English language, to TiVo. They were well-funded with venture capital and had a technology that could truly reinvent how we consume television. The problem was, they marketed their technology directly to the middle of the bell curve. Seeing the mass market appeal of the product, they ignored the principles of the law of diffusion and targeted to the masses. Compounding that bad aim, they attempted to appeal to the cynical majority by explaining what the product did instead of stating why the company or the product existed in the first place. They attempted to convince with features and benefits. They basically said to the mass market, "We've got a new product. It pauses live TV, skips commercials, rewinds live TV, memorizes your viewing habits, and records shows on your behalf without you needing to set the device." Analysts were intrigued by the prospects of TiVo, as well as its competitor, Replay, a well-funded startup backed by venture capital. One market researcher estimated that these so-called personal TV receivers would reach 760,000 subscribers by the end of the first year. TiVo finally shipped in 1999. Mike Ramsey and Jim Barton, two former colleagues who had founded TiVo, were certain the TV viewing public was ready. And they may have been, if only TiVo knew how to talk to them. But despite the excitement among the analysts and technophiles, sales were hugely disappointing. TiVo sold about 48,000 units the first year. Meanwhile, Replay, whose backers included the founders of Netscape, failed to gain a following and instead became embroiled in a dispute with television networks over the way it allowed viewers to skip ads. In 2000, the company adopted a new strategy and a few months later was sold to Sonic Blue, which later filed for bankruptcy. Analysts were stumped as to why the TiVo machines weren't selling. The company seemed to have everything going for it. After all, they had the recipe for success: a great quality product, money, and ideal market conditions. In 2002, after TiVo had been on the market for nearly 3 years, a headline in Advertising Age summed it up best: more U.S. homes have outhouses than TiVos. At the time, there were 671,000 homes with outhouses in the United States, compared to 514,000 homes with TiVo. Not only were sales poor, but the company has not fared well for its shareholders either. At the time of the initial public stock offering, in the fall of 1999, TiVo stock traded at slightly over $40 a share. A few months later, it hit its high at just over $50, and then the stock declined steadily for the rest of the year, and except for 3 short periods since 2001, it has never traded over $10. If you apply the principles of the Golden Circle, the answer is clear. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And TiVo attempted to convince consumers to buy by telling them only what the product did, features and rational benefits. The practical-minded, technophobic mass market's response was predictable. I don't understand it. I don't need it. I don't like it. You're scaring me. There were a small number of TiVo loyalists, probably about 10%, those who just got it, who didn't need an explicit articulation of why. They exist to this day, but there were not enough of them to create that tipping point that TiVo needed and predicted. What TiVo should have done is talked about what they believed. What they should have done is talked about why the product was invented in the first place, and then ventured out to share their invention with the innovators and early adopters who believed what they believed. If they had started their sales pitch with why the product existed in the first place, the product itself would have become the proof of that higher cause, proof of why. If their golden circle was in balance, the outcome may have been very different. Compare the original list of features and benefits with a revised version that starts with why. If you're the kind of person who likes to have total control over every aspect of your life, boy, do we have a product for you. It pauses live TV, skips commercials, rewinds live TV, memorizes your viewing habits, and records shows on your behalf without you even needing to set the device.